1260 AM Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. On a 213-209 vote, the House passing a resolution to censure Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff of California over comments he made years ago during investigations into former President Trump. Democrats interrupting business by chanting... Schiff becomes the third member in the 21st century to be censured by the House. Federal judge has set July 26th as the court date for Hunter Biden to appear for a plea deal he struck with the Justice Department. Crews and equipment flooding into the North Atlantic where the search continues for the Titan submersible that's gone missing with five people on board. Coast Guard Captain Jamie Frederick asked when the search might be called off.
We're not there yet, but if we continue to search, potentially we could be at that point. But again, we're not there yet, and that's a discussion that we will have with the family long before I'm going to discuss that here publicly.
Navy official says a portable crane system has arrived in Newfoundland. This is ABC News. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell tells a House committee taming inflation still has a long way to go. Even in the post-pandemic era, American school children are struggling.
It's called the Nation's Report Card from the National Center for Education Statistics. It shows average scores and testing assessments of 13-year-old students in the 2022-2023 school year declined 4 points in reading and 9 points in math compared to the 2019-2020 school year. And compared to a decade ago, there was a 7-point decline in reading, 14-point decline in math. The new scores overall are the lowest in decades, math scores falling to the lowest level ever recorded. Education officials say the results shine a light on the lingering impact of the pandemic while dashing any hopes of a quick academic recovery. Derek Dennis, ABC News.
Portion of Broward County, Florida under quarantine. State officials trying to get rid of the giant African land snail discovered a few weeks ago. Residents not allowed to move plants, soil, yard waste, debris, compost, or building materials from the quarantine area. Andy Field, ABC News.
News is brought to you by Gingras Thompson & Walks, a statewide team of personal injury lawyers getting you the justice you deserve. Call 855-954-1186 for a free consultation.
Here's what you need to know in western Wisconsin. Good afternoon, I'm Jimmy Kuska. There's an air quality advisory in effect through Friday night due to unhealthy levels of ozone for the entire state of Wisconsin. The National Weather Service says conditions will stay hot and dry for at least a few more days. Wildfire danger also remaining high for northern Wisconsin and southwestern Wisconsin this week. Roads used for agriculture in Wisconsin will see increased funding from the state. Today, Governor Tony Evers signed Senate Bill 247 into law, which will create the Agricultural Roads Improvement Program. Wisconsin Act 13 will support roads that are frequently used for farm operations and wouldn't otherwise likely be targeted for state aid. The bipartisan bill was authored by State Senator Howard Markline of Spring Green and had near unanimous support from the legislature and from state associations. And tonight is the unofficial start of Country Fest in Kidat. The event, which has run since 1987, has a ticket holders event tonight before the main event kicks off the next 3 days. For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Kuska.
The law firm of Gingras Thompson & Walks has a track record of making life-changing, positive differences for their clients. $5.25 million to a woman who suffered brain injuries and her husband passed away when struck by a drunk driver. $1 million to three different individuals injured by drunk drivers. $1 million settlement to a man injured in a motorcycle accident. Call Gingras Thompson & Walks, 855-954-1186.
GTWLawyers.com. Look up cheese curds, you'll find this basic definition. Wet pieces of curdled milk. Well, it should also include the word delicious. As we continue to celebrate June Dairy Month, do you know how much milk is needed to make 1 pound of cheese curds? 16 ounces, 64 ounces, or 160 ounces, 10 pounds of milk? The answer coming up.
It actually is a sound of freshness.
Rachel Kerr is talking about squeaky curds. She's with the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin and a bit of a cheese nerd.
Those elastic protein strands rub against the enamel of your teeth and create that characteristic sound.
The squeak turns stretchy when battered and deep fried. Some believe the idea to fry globs of cheese happened by accident. I consider it a happy accident. Okay, so did you guess it takes 10 pounds of milk to make 1 pound of curds? Now we want to know your favorite and where do you get your squeaky or deep fried curds? Go to our Civic Media Facebook page to share your answers. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Do you get sick of the news? Wonder what it's all about and why it matters to you? Tired of the talking heads? Want to move beyond talking points? For those that want to know, there's only one place to go, and that's the Maggie Dawn Show. Come listen to a pragmatist that gets beyond the politics.
The Maggie Dawn Show, Mondays through Thursdays at 6 p.m. on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to. Lots to talk about under the heading of Democrats getting stuff done. And you got to give Democrats credit. They are getting stuff done. And I'm checking the I-95 work cam. This was a brilliant move by Josh Shapiro, the governor of Pennsylvania. Because you remember, there was a bridge collapsed on I-95 in Philadelphia. Carried about 160,000 vehicles every single day. It's been closed since June 11th when a truck flipped over, caught on fire, melted this overpass. And you've now got the governor going, hey, 2 weeks. 2 weeks it's going to get open. And he did a brilliant thing. I talked about this last week. Did a brilliant thing. So we're going to put it up on the web, and you're going to be able to watch these people doing their jobs. We're going to watch these people getting stuff done. We're going to watch it in real time, how we're rebuilding this country. And good on Shapiro for doing that. Over the weekend, the president was in Philadelphia, said there's no more important job to the country right now, as far as he's concerned, and highlighted the fact that these union workers are out there 24/7 busting their behinds to get this main thoroughfare in this country, this main economic thoroughfare open again. And look, you know, the fact that they're doing this about time. My mind goes to this place. Can you imagine if the Trump folks were this functional, the kind of PR they would be throwing out around this? Oh, it's the greatest ever, and how they were doing the most fantastic ever. Look, these guys are showing up, doing the job, and this is, like I said, this is good stuff. And I've been watching the progress, and it's really quite remarkable and quite amazing what we can do as a country when we get our hard hats on, when we put the red hat, blue hat stuff aside, we get to work. This important stuff, which is why I had to throw this up there. Had to throw up the I-95 bridge work. And, you know, it's one of those things where this is what we should be focusing on, rebuilding our country. Sad reality, though, we're in this moment. And the story of today, and there's a couple of big ones that I'm going to get to and I want to get your thoughts on. But, you know, the big story today, Sam Alito, Supreme Court Justice, we find... And again, not shocked, not surprised. We know this. Accepted and failed to report luxury travel at the behest of a billionaire. And what's interesting about this is ProPublica came out with a piece and went through all of what we already know.
You get these justices like Alito. You get these justices like Thomas. You get these justices like former, deceased Justice Antonin Scalia. They go on these extravagant trips. And, it's funded by, ideologically same-thinking billionaires. Interestingly enough, set up by a right-wing, kind of foundation, kind of political arm that pushes judicial people into places. It seems well coordinated, because it is. And this ProPublica piece goes through this on how this Leonard Leo at the Federalist Society is part of this whole conduit between these billionaires and these justices, and how they groom, how they do all this stuff. And it should have just flopped, like every piece like this does, because, they don't answer to it. They're above it. They're the elites. But Alito, oh no, Alito had to preempt the ProPublica piece by putting a pre-bottle, a wine bottle, an excuse in the Wall Street Journal. Yes, went to the investor classes newspaper and made his case. And his case was simple. His case was simple. And I loved it. You can read the whole thing. It's a lot of wasted time, a lot of wasted jargon, legalese. He's making a legal case. But at the end of it, his argument is brilliant. His final argument is, hey, I could have taken commercial flights. I could have, but it would have imposed substantial cost and inconvenience on the U.S. Marshal Service and the deputy who would have to come along with me and the security. It was much cheaper for me to go with this billionaire, because had I not gone, here it is. And I quote, "As for the flight, Mr. Singer and others had already made arrangements to fly to Alaska when I was invited shortly before the event, and I was asked whether I would like to fly there in a seat that, as far as I am aware, would have otherwise been vacant. It was my understanding that this would not impose any extra cost on Mr. Singer." Now, here's the thing. If your kid came to you and go, we snuck into the baseball game and, we ate all the hot dogs. Well, we stole all this stuff and we did all, but the seat would have been empty anyway. We were just filling the seat because, it was there. Would you have fallen for that? Of course not. But again, he wants to change the narrative. He wants to, this very technical legal stuff, when the reality is, our billionaire class has such outweighed influence on our legal system, on our political system, on our legal and our political system, because, these organizations like the Federalist Society and others, look, this is where money in politics is the problem. This is where Citizens United is the problem. This is where, giving all of this wealth to a handful of people who have such outweighed control over our process is the problem. And the weird thing is this guy's trying to go, no, I'm above reproach. Don't you think I'm of sufficient intelligence that I know when I'm being played? And that's not the point. The point here is that Alito and then the Gorsuches and the Thomases and all of these people, they were groomed. For decades, they were groomed in law firms and in colleges and through these foundations and through these front groups to become these ideologues. It's not that Paul Singer could call him and say, Judge Alito, I want you to decide this. It's no, I know what you're going to think before you think it. I have groomed you into this justice, this robo-justice that is going to get me my decisions. That's going to harm working people and going to side with corporate America and the moneyed interest. And they do it time and time again. That, my friends, that is the point of all of this. And the fact that you've got Alito trying to make this case that somehow, he's above this is ridiculous. Now you go, but Rick, can you point to cases where corporate America has dominated our courts? Oh, I am so happy you asked. Because the reality is this Supreme Court for the last 20 plus years has been the corporate court. This has been the Roberts Court, has been the U.S. Chamber of Commerce's pocketed court. They are the go-to when they want to make sure that they get what they want, which means more money, more power, more control, and less ability for working people to fight for better wages, hours, conditions. And look, just over the, there's a couple that pop off my head. You know, the Janus decision is one that said, you know what, we're going to overturn more than 40 years of decided law. Now remember, my good friends, John Roberts said he was all about balls and strikes, decided law, stare decisis. I'm not going to make things up as we go. And what they do, out of whole cloth, they turned the entire public sector workforce into a no rights at work workforce. Oh, we should have the right to work. It's like saying that someone who's drowning has the right to swim. This is what has happened to our system. And they did this on a purely partisan, purely Federalist Society line 5-4 vote. This, again, another one of those moments where the power and the influence of the moneyed interests dominate those of the workers. You go and you look at what's happened to other workers, and you know the Epic System cases that came out years ago that basically put forced arbitration clauses into every worker's pocket. You know, I still remember my aunt calling me, and this has been years ago. She called me and said, you know, I've been working at this company for 20 years. The boss just walked in and said, here's a piece of paper, you sign it or there's the door. And she goes, what is it? I don't know. And I asked her to read it to me. And I said, well, that's a forced arbitration clause. That's saying that you don't have the right to sue them for anything. You have to go to an arbitrator. And I explained the system of how arbitration works and how it's heavily weighted toward the employer because they've always got attorneys. They've always got legal advice. And very, very rarely do workers have the same leverage and power. This is a screw job for working people. This is why every worker needs a union. This is why every person should have a contract. But this is what the Supreme Court imposed on every working person in this country because the Leonard Leos of the world, the Federalist Societies of the world, the Chamber of Commerce's of the world, all of these moneyed, powered interests, that's what they want. They want powerless workers. So when she said, well, do I have to sign it? I said, well, you have two choices. You sign it or there's the door. That's what our Supreme Court has said. So you have to sign your rights away. And time again, this court has been the corporate court. Yeah, all of the other stuff, fine. The social stuff, all of that, yeah, they're right where they're supposed to be because those are the tools to keep us stupid and to keep us pitted against each other. Those are the tools to rip us apart. The abortion, the same-sex marriage, all of that divisive stuff that we're never going to absolutely agree on. They know that. They throw the red meat out there so they can rob us blind. And it's working. It's working so well. Which is why, again, this case to me, this situation to me is so incredibly important. Now, as we've had on this program, Sheldon Whitehouse came on and talked about the fact that there needs to be oversight. There needs to be someone paying attention, and they're going to move ahead, I guess, sometime after the 4th of July. Dick Durbin, the senator from Illinois, and Sheldon Whitehouse, the senator from Rhode Island, they're going to start marking up a bill to start holding these justices accountable. Their quote today, which I think is incredibly important, the highest court in the land should not have the lowest ethical standards. You think? We give these nine people in robes so much power, so much deference, so much ability to control what happens, and yet they abuse it at every opportunity. And then they're shocked when we go, maybe you shouldn't be taking $500,000 vacations, Justice Thomas, on a billionaire's yacht. Maybe you shouldn't be taking a $100,000 flight to a remote part of Alaska to take a $1,000 a day fishing trip that average every working people could never afford. But your justification is, well, the seat was going to be empty. What did you have me do? Not go? It's time for working people to come together in this moment. And these are the things that are important. So I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Is this much ado about nothing? Is this something that we should be getting worked up about? I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Now, look, it's not just our Supreme Court justices who are lining their pockets and taking stuff from the billionaire class. It's not just Alito and Thomas and Scalia and the rest of them. It's not. It's all of them. It's the fact that money has permeated our political system and political favors. Well, you know, it wasn't a quid pro quo. We're buddies. We're friends. We go to the same country clubs that they pay the fees for. We take the same vacations that they pay for. We go to the same restaurants that they pay for, because it's hospitality. Or it was a donation. And I look at Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, who now the story has come out that evidently Ron DeSantis is an avid golfer. Something about, you know, crazy Republicans and golf seem to be, there's a common thread. But evidently, a billionaire in Florida, a guy who honestly has lots of business before the state, evidently he donated, and it was so nice of him, out of the goodness of his heart, donated to Ron DeSantis a golf simulator worth tens of thousands of dollars to be installed in the governor's mansion back in 2019. Because, hey, you know, the pandemic was coming. You know, needed to make sure that Ron had something to do. You know, because, hey, you know, it's hard to get out on the links in Florida. So, you know, we have no idea how much it actually cost, but installed this thing worth tens of thousands of dollars in this private pool cabana so DeSantis could practice his short game, could get his strokes down. Now, there's no record who paid for it. DeSantis didn't pay for it. The state didn't pay for it. We find out this Mortzia Hosani is the guy who paid for it. It's undisclosed. Nobody knows anything about it. Never reported. None of that stuff. But, you know, it's one of these things where it's perfectly legal because we think we're following the rules, because no one's going to hold them accountable. Now, this is the weird moment of where we're at. If you or I would have done any of this stuff, I mean, look at the Alito thing for a second. If you or I had done any of that, we'd be screwed. we'd be in trouble. If a federal worker, think about this, if a federal worker got caught doing any of the stuff that Alito and Thomas and them have done, if a state worker got a gift like, oh, I don't know, a multi-thousand-dollar golf simulator to put in their basement, what do you think would happen to them? Now, on the federal level, there are strict ethical standards for the janitor. If you're a janitor or someone working in the dining hall, there are strict ethical standards about accepting gifts in exchange for official actions. The kind of things that could, I think the federal bribery statute's like 15 years in prison and a fine 3 times the value of the bribe. So this is one of these things. Maybe we start holding some of these people accountable. Maybe we start, I don't know, paying attention to where the money goes. And for me, that's what it always comes back to. Ideology aside, take your red hats and your blue hats and shove them. It's about the green. And this is where Rupert Murdoch was right. It's not about red, blue. It's about green. It's about the money. It's about what these people have put in their pockets. And the kind of power that we give them. And the kind of control that they have over our lives. You know, I've been saying for the longest time, our Supreme Court, they're moving us back to the days of the Lochner era and worse. This idea that there can be no laws to protect minimum wage or maximum hour laws or working conditions or any of that stuff. Bringing back freedom. We're going to have freedom. We're going to have freedom to work in poverty, freedom to work for horrible people. We're going to have freedom to work in dangerous conditions because it's our liberty. It's our freedom. We can do these things because we're Americans. And that's what Americans do, or at least that's what they're trying to get us to buy. And the frustrating part in all of this is that I'm not seeing the kind of pushback that we would deserve, that they should deserve, that we should be heaping upon them. Instead, we get nonsense. We get nonsense. We get Ron DeSantis, and I got to play this clip of Ron DeSantis. Ron DeSantis was on one of these Christian Broadcasting Network interviews. And he's, wow, the worst pandering possible, I think. It really is quite remarkable when you listen. Listen to this. This is Governor Ron DeSantis.
In terms of, throughout history.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I think like, you know, could I have been there with Jesus' disciples? I mean, you know, these are people who, you know, Peter's just fishing one day and all of a sudden, you know, this guy comes up to him, catches all the fish and says, you know, you're going to be fisher. I want you to be a fisher of men. Come with me. And so these guys all went out and they dedicated their life to spreading the gospel. And they all were killed for, you know, they tried to kill John. John ended up, you know, being able to survive. But I mean, the intent was to put him to death too. And, you know, to talk about what that was like, you know, talk about what their impressions are, you know, what of that. I look back at that and would love to have been able to be there with them. In terms of,
wow, I would have loved to have been there with them. You know, I would have just loved to have been right there with Paul and John and as they're being executed, but hanging right on one of the third crosses over there with Jesus. I mean, wow. But the thing is there are people watching this going, oh, he's such a good Christian. He wanted to go back and it would be, he wants to be able to sit around the campfire and tell stories of what it was like to be murdered. I'm my gosh, the level of pandering. But again, we fall for it. We fall for this nonsense. These are people that have been put into political power to, well, it really is, when you stop and think about it, remarkable, the world that we are in this moment. And it's people like DeSantis, it's the Trumps, it's all of these politicos who have been groomed for years to be able to raise enough money from these billionaires to be able to get into these positions and do the things that billionaires want, that the moneyed interests want. And for me, it's across political lines. It's not about red hat, blue hat. The extremes are the extremes. for me, it's what happens to working people. And you look at the policies that have come out, and this is the bottom line in this. You look at the decisions that have come out of the Supreme Court. You look at the policies that come out of Congress. You look at what the Republicans are doing right now at every opportunity to harm working people. And it's all bad. And it's meant to make us angry. It's meant to make us throw up our hands and feel hopeless. It's meant to make us be despaired and turn against our neighbor and blame someone else. When we know who to blame, it's those folks at the top. It's not right, left. It's up, down. It's always been. It always will be. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1943. That was the day United Mine Workers President John L. Lewis issued strike orders at the nation's mines, calling out more than 500,000 miners. The third general coal strike in 3 months defied the wartime no-strike pledge. Miners raised several demands, including wage increases, an end to the dangerous third shift, and portal-to-portal pay. High wartime inflation only worsened miners' already low wages. Early that spring, Lewis denounced the mine owners, the War Labor Board, and the Little Steel Formula used to calculate wartime wages. He warned the formula meant starvation for workers and the end of collective bargaining. By April, President Roosevelt had ordered wage freezes. Miners began walking out of the pits even before the strike call, as soon as the War Labor Board handed down their decision on June 19th. The board had rejected all of the miners' demands. The United Mine Workers responded, stating, quote, "No member and no officer of the United Mine Workers of America would be so destitute of principle and so devoid of honor as to sign or execute such an infamous yellow dog contract." Though the United Mine Workers were forced to call off the strike the next day, some miners continued to stay out in protest. 4 days later, Congress passed the dreaded Smith-Conley Act, dubbed the Slave Labor Bill, in response to the strike. Throughout the summer, miners across the country would rage against the government for threatening them with conscription and jail time if they dared refuse the terms of the decision. By November, the miners would walk out a fourth time and finally win many of their demands, at least from the War Labor Board. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2.
The six-person majority of far-right supremes, who presently dominate America's judicial system, seems intent on demonstrating that having a seat on our Supreme Court does not mean there is anything supreme about them. Consider one bottom-line measure of character that is central to the court's integrity: financial ethics. This simply requires the judges to file annual reports to reveal any sources of outside income and gifts, thus providing some minimal assurance to regular folks that the eminences are not taking personal payments from moneyed interests seeking favorable court rulings. But unlike all other top government officials, Supreme Court justices have a loosey-goosey system for reporting financial conflicts of interest. It's called Trust Us. Thus, for years, Clarence Thomas has been taking millions of dollars worth of gimmies from a right-wing corporate billionaire while voting to impose this benefactor's plutocratic agenda as the law of the land. Yet, in 2 decades of financial reports to the people, there is not a whisper from his supremeness that he has regularly pocketed a wealth of gratuities from this special friend. Or take John Roberts, the Chief Justice, who poses as a paragon of judicial independence while aggressively pressing an agenda of corporate supremacy over the common good. While he's not known to take payments from corporate interests, his wife does. She's been paid millions of dollars in commissions to recruit lawyers for firms that have business before Justice Roberts. Yet, until this special interest enrichment of his family was recently uncovered, Roberts never mentioned it in his annual reports. Meanwhile, every federal official must agree to abide by a code of ethical behavior, with the exception of 9 officials who have exempted themselves, saying, "Trust us." Yes, the Supremes. This is Jim Hightower saying, since the court refuses to fix itself, the people must. To help, go to fixthecourt.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, all you-know-what broke loose today on the House floor. Evidently, Kevin McCarthy has lost control of the crazy caucus. They have voted to censure Adam Schiff. And again, this is supposed to be the worst of the worst crimes. This is what you... They didn't censure someone like George Santos, which was kind of the punchline of the day from Representative Dan Goldman, who said, "You're the party of George Santos, and who are you holding accountable? The guy is an alleged and acknowledged liar and indicted, and you protect him every day. Don't lecture us with your protection and your defense of Donald Trump. It's pathetic, and it's beneath you and beneath this body." He said the GOP really isn't trying to hold anyone accountable, especially not Schiff. They're just trying to score cheap political points. And that's what this really was about. It was all about, you know, we need to have this grandstand because they had Durham come in to testify, because this was supposed to be, you know, the hoax, the Russia hoax, Russia, hoax, hoax, hoax. And Durham was supposed to knock it out of the park. Not so much. He testified. Yeah, it was a long, long hearing. And to be honest, there was nothing new. No smoking guns, no shock, no headlines, no breaking, this or that. Basically, just insert your talking point, pick your hat, insert talking point, and that's where it went. Because we already have pretty much all we need to know. Did Russia interfere in the 2016 election? Yes, we know that. The reality is, and look, there have been several investigations conducted into whether the Trump campaign colluded with Russia. There is. Now, is there conclusive? Was there a smoking gun? No, there's not. But there were numerous contacts between the Trump campaign and Russian officials. We know this. There was the big one in June of 2016 where you had Dumb Jr., you had Kush, you had Manafort in there with the Russian lawyer because, hey, we got damaging stuff. We got stuff. And I love how Durham today tried to kind of poo-poo that away, saying, well, you know, everyone does that. Everyone does it. No, not quite. Not everyone takes a meeting with a Russian asset. Not that's unusual. Really unusual. In fact, if it had, and I remember when this story broke, we had people coming on going, look, had that come to us and I was running a campaign, immediately we'd be going to the Department of Justice. Immediately we'd be going to the FBI. Immediately we'd be reporting, which they didn't do. And look, you know, there have been people who were convicted. I mean, there are links there. It's there. So to say it's all a hoax is a nice talking point if you're wearing the red hat. But it doesn't hold up to scrutiny. And, you know, the sad reality is, I look at what the Trump people have gotten, the kind of kid glove treatment that they've gotten all through this, from the beginning. And it does show that there are two justice systems. One for working people and one for our elites, of which Trump is an elite. The fact that it took a year for the FBI to move on this guy and say, hey, we want our stuff back, is quite remarkable. They did everything they could possibly do. They did backflips to not get in this position. They begged, they pleaded, they did everything they could possibly do to not be here. And the thing is this today's hearings was supposed to be more right-wing talking points of, you know, Russia was all a hoax and, you know, Donald's a victim and how, you know, everyone was stacked against Trump and how everybody was piling on. It's the victim. I mean, it's amazing how well they play the V card. Which is weird because, you know, you think of Trump and his brand, he's supposed to be a winner. He's supposed to be the champion. He's supposed to be the guy that goes out there and fights and wins no matter what. And yet all I hear is whine and complain and poor, poor, woe is me, pitiful, pitiful me. Now look, stop with the hoax talking point. There were multiple investigations at every level of our intelligence apparatus.
There was a Senate investigation, a Senate Intelligence Committee investigation, Republican-led. A U.S. House Intelligence Committee investigation. There was the Mueller report that documented 100 points of working together. Call it collusion, call it coordination, call it cooperation, call it whatever you want. But they were there. It is clearly stated that the Russian government, the Russian Federation of Intelligence Services, they interfered, period. Putin wanted it, ordered it, they engaged in it. It's that simple. And yet you still have this attempt to rewrite. The FSB hacked and leaked Democratic Party emails. They did that. Leaked documents. All of the social media stuff that happened, that happened. You cannot then go back and say, no, no, it's all a hoax. All bad. All a hoax. All of the attempts to hack into state and local election infrastructure happened. You cannot go and rewrite that. But they're trying. And you have to give them credit. They are trying. And they're trying to create an environment where they want us to believe that somehow the justice system is heavily, heavily coming down on them. You know, it's like the guy yesterday, you know, I was, you know, convicted because of my belief in God. You know, North Carolina came after me because I believe in God. No, they came after you because you took a utility knife, a box cutter to your son's willy. You home circumcised your child with a box cutter. That's why they came after you. Not because you believe in God. The level of victimhood. Oh, they came after me because I had these classified documents in boxes that had my stuff. Yes, you had classified documents. You just admitted it. And what I want to know, you know, all of those subpoenas, all of those seizures of people's cell phones, my congressman, Scott Pardon Me Perry, what came of them seizing his cell phone? What was on that cell phone that made the FBI and the Department of Justice go, hey, we want this? All of those cell phones, Giuliani, that Victoria Tozing, Michael McDonald, my guy, John Eastman, Jeffrey Clark. I mean, they're Mike Lindell. Have we heard from Mike Lindell lately? Is Frank TV still up? I want to know what was in there. I want to know the lies and all that stuff that came up. I want to know what was on there. And maybe we're still going to find out, but this far down the road, this is where I'm struggling. I'm struggling with, we have an elite class, someone like Trump, who has never been told no in his life, who believes that he's entitled to whatever he wants. He can step on and crush whatever he wants. And I'm struggling with the fact that there are working people who go, that's our guy. Without understanding that the people that he's going to step on and crush are them too. I told the story yesterday of my ex-wife's boss and playing basketball against him, and this idea that no one should ever call a foul on him and he should be able to foul everyone. He's entitled to do whatever he wanted on that court. He was the king of the court. It was his. And when someone finally knocked him down, me, nobody on the court knew what to do or how to react. And I think we're kind of in this moment. The Republican Party is shocked that someone has finally knocked a dear leader off the perch. They're trying to defend it because they don't know what's going to happen to them because of all of the things that they've been a party to. All of the things that they've put themselves in. Stop and think about all the lawyers who've left Trump's employ, who have had to lawyer up themselves, all of the people who have worked for Trump. And Brett Baer did a great job. Look, I'm generally not a huge Brett Baer fan. Of the Fox people, he's the best. But when he said, look, you hired all these people and all these people think you're horrible. You brought all of these people in and all of them are saying, no, don't vote for him again. And his response, well, you know, those are just disgruntled employees. You know, I hired 10 to 1 better than that. This is a moment. this is a moment where we had better start paying attention. And really, coming back to some bit between the curbs. The dear leader stuff. Now, look, I want Trump to run. I'm telling you, I'm very clear about this. Be clear from the very beginning. I want Trump to be the Republican candidate. This idea that oh, Democrats are fighting against Donald Trump. They're indicting him because they don't want him to be the candidate. Nonsense. I think the only way Biden is the candidate in 2024 is if it's Trump. If Trump goes down, I don't know that a primary challenger doesn't pop up. But here's the thing. I want Trump to stand for election. I want the American people to see who and what he is. And then to show us who we are as a people. Is this who we really are? Look, I get the fantasy. I got the narrative in 2016. I've said this before. I was one of the first people who said Trump was going to win because of the narrative he spun for the forgotten, for the people who were the struggling, the working class who Democrats forgot, Republicans have been stomping all over and have been left behind. I got it early because I saw it in my family. He didn't deliver. He was never going to deliver. He was never going to be able to deliver. But now there's a chance for those folks to wake up and go, hey, maybe this wasn't the right choice. And to actually then make a choice that's going to move us in the right direction. Look, I like Joe Biden. I think Biden, policy-wise, has done an outstanding job. I think he has done an incredible job. Is he a great candidate? No. He's not. He's not a good candidate at all on the stump. But that's not why I vote for him. I vote for him because the policies he's bringing. Do I care if he can deliver a line? No. Do I care if he stumbles over statements and says things that you go, I don't know what that meant? No, not even a little bit. It's the policies. It's the direction. It's the fact that he's somebody who's going to policy-wise, executive order-wise, move and fight for working people. That is the key. So all of the social media stuff of him stumbling over words or saying God save the queen, which I can't figure out either, I don't care about. I care about there's a bridge in Philadelphia that's being rebuilt. There's an overpass being rebuilt, and it's going to be done quickly. Going to put people to work, going to get a region back open. I care about those thousands of projects across this country that are going to be built. I care about those jobs that are created and then being union jobs. And that those union jobs having a reverberating effect through the local economy to create even more jobs. That's what I care about. I want to hear your thoughts, though. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back with some more. Stick around. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. Back after this.
Open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1877. That was the day that 10 Irish miners were hung in Pennsylvania. They were part of a group of 20 who had been sentenced to death for allegedly being part of the Molly Maguires, a group of alleged radical Irish miners. Miners were on strike in the Schuylkill County anthracite coal region. The Mollies were accused of perpetrating violence and murder against the mine owners. Newspapers helped to rile up anger against the striking Irish miners. A Pinkerton detective infiltrated the group, and his testimony doomed those he accused to the gallows. Since the hangings, many have questioned his testimony and the cases made against the miners. But at the time, many newspapers celebrated the hangings. hangings. On the day of the executions, the New York Tribune called the men, quote, the wild beasts of the collieries of eastern Pennsylvania. The Carbon Advocate of Lehighton, Pennsylvania, declared the majesty of the law has been vindicated. The community breathes more freely now that these men, who feared neither the laws of God or man, have met their doom. The day has gone down in labor history as the Day of the Rope, or Black Thursday. The message of the hanging was meant to be sent to all who would dare stand up against the mine owners. In 1979, the governor of Pennsylvania posthumously pardoned John Blackjack Kehoe, one of the alleged leaders of the Molly.
Down the mines, no sunlight shines. Those pits, they're black as hell. In mud and slime, they do their time. It's Paddy's prison cell. And they curse the day they travel.
Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So, shocker of all shockers, Elon Musk's a dirtbag. Shocker. I know. Evidently, a lawsuit has been filed claiming that Twitter... Remember when Elon took over Twitter and they went and they fired a bunch of people? Said, you know, if you're not willing to work a gazillion hours a week and dedicate your existence to Twitter, we don't need you. And he said he got rid of like 70% of the people or whatever that number he said was. And the idea of just slash and burn. And they didn't replace a lot of things. And they don't do a lot of things. And it Twitter has really diminished over his tenure. This lawsuit is saying that, hey, when that happened, they promised all of the workers who stayed. And I remember this. They told people who were leaving, we'll give you severance packages. I don't remember that happening. But they said the people would stay. We're going to give you enormous, enormous bonus. In fact, I think as the guy, this Mark Schobinger, points out, he was the senior director of compensation, left the company last month, and filed this class action, I guess, in San Francisco yesterday, said that, before and after Musk purchased Twitter, the company promised employees that they would get a 50% target bonus in 2022. Evidently, it didn't happen. Could be. And look, in Elon's defense, he's only the richest man in the world. Maybe didn't have the money laying around. I mean, because you bought Twitter for what, $44 billion? It's down into the maybe 20. So he's lost more than half of the value. And look, I keep telling people with the blue check, stop paying him, and we'll go even further down. But now, evidently, this money has not materialized, and he is accusing in this lawsuit Twitter of breach of contract. Now, interestingly enough, in much the Elon Musk way, evidently, Twitter does not have a spokesperson or, someone who would respond to these kind of stories. And they responded to the newspaper's request for comment with a poop emoji. And you go, yeah, that I hope that's their filing in court. I hope that comes before a judge. and this goes. Now, here's the weird thing. This is where I bring this back to our Supreme Court. Because this guy is proposed a class action lawsuit. A class action lawsuit of all of the interested parties who got cheated out of this bonus that was promised. This target bonus that was promised. If you come, you do all this extra work, you'll get this. Our Supreme Court has ruled that this kind of class action, not the way to go. That each one of those workers who have been cheated, that they would have to file individual arbitration cases, not lawsuits. Again, this is coming back, moving back around to our Alito conversation. this idea that, yeah, there are lawsuits, there are tons of lawsuits already out there, but our Supreme Court years ago decided that these class action lawsuits, and this was the Concepcion versus AT&T case, was one of them. And again, I'm not a lawyer, don't pretend to be, but I do understand how this came about. Evidently, AT&T cheated people out of a little bit of money, little small amount of money, but millions of people. And you're not going to file a lawsuit over $20, but a million of you will, 10 million of you will. And this is what happened. And the court said, nope, you're going to have to file those individually. And this is how we ended up moving down this road to where class actions have been kind of pushed to the wayside. And now it's everyone's going to have to file their own case. And as the article points out, there are thousands of individual arbitration cases already out there from the mass layoffs that happened under Musk's tenure last year. This, again, looking at what our Supreme Court does, how it trickles down to working people. You go, wow, these are just Twitter employees. These are employees who were promised compensation, who are going to be screwed. They're going to be. They're probably going to lose because the system is rigged against them. You go into these arbitration situations where the employer has heavy weight in who the arbitrator is. And look, arbitrators are like anybody else. They know what side the bread, the butter's on. They know who's paying the bills. They know who's keep putting their kids through school. They know who's got putting food on the table. And what they also know is, you know, Twitter's going to have lawyers, lots of them. And each one of these thousands of people, do you think they're going to be able to afford it? Think they're going to be able to afford the best legal representation and the best legal minds to be able to get to whittle out of them a couple of $1,000s? Of course not. You're going to get guys like me who are going to go in there and go, I'm going to tell the truth. I'm going to be honest. And that's going to be enough because that's the working class mentality. That truth matters, that justice matters, that being right matters. That if I go in there and I say the boss, a crummy boss, promised me I was going to get a bonus if I did this, this, and this, I did this, this, and this, and he reneged, that an arbitrator, a judge, that someone's going to go, you're right. That's not how it always works. And we know from the numbers, overwhelmingly in arbitration cases, arbitrators decide on the side of employers simply because of the representation part of it. And this, again, another thing brought to us by our Supreme Court. Now, the other part of this is Twitter employees should have been unionized from the start. There should have been a written contract. There should have been all of these things that say, you know what, if this happens, then this. That's what contracts do. That's why every CEO in this country has a contract. It's amazing to me that working people go, yeah, no, it's okay for the CEO of my company to have a contract. So when they fire him, he gets $1 million or $100 million or like Robert Nardelli at Home Depot, $220 million to get fired. No, no, that's okay. But me, no, no, they'll just show me the door. So I'm looking at this. And again, this is one of those moments where a crummy boss has this outweighed power and the workers don't. Because for me, this is that kind of cut and dry situation. Now, of course, they want to make this about, you know, it's about Twitter. It's about, you know rich, you know high priced, tech workers, still workers, still people who come in and give hours of their lives to be able to support their families. And the sooner we realize and realign our allegiances and move out of our silos on whatever red hat, blue hat, and we align it back into the way that, you know, my grandparents' generation believed, it's about how you put food on the table, we're going to continue to see stuff like this happen to us. And there's going to continue to be a political system that's going to continue to do it to us. Because as my eighth grade government teacher said, government decides who gets what. If you elect people who they have the ear of the wealth class, who do you think they're going to pander to? You know, I had a friend who was a congressman for years, said, look, nobody ever bought my vote, but they got my ear 15 minutes at a time every time I had to ask for a campaign contribution. every time I had to ask, you know, a rich business owner, hey, you know, I need a couple of bucks to stay in power. Well, what are your thoughts on the minimum wage? Well, I'd like to raise the minimum wage. Well, you know, I'm not so fond of that. Well, maybe we could lower the raising of the minimum.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK 1260 AM Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News.